Thank you so much for listening to CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. This show is called Blue Sky Horse Radio Forever. And Blue Sky Horse Radio Forever is going to be centering on horses and people who love horses and lots of arts as well. And then also just humane treatments and anti-slaughter endeavor, as well as wild horses and information about wild horses. So having Rhonda Snow with us today is a great honor. She's going to talk about the native ponies and more. Rhonda has One Horse Town by Blackberry Smoke as her song request. So we are going to kick it off by listening to that song. Thank you, Rhonda. That was Blackberry Smoke, One Horse Town, requested by Rhonda Snow. Since we've spoken with her in 2020, time flies, she's just gone on to do great things, and we're going to hear about that. So Rhonda, thank you for coming on the show today, and why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay, my name is Rhonda Snow. I'm from Northwestern Ontario. As a fact, right now, I'm on a little island called we just call it Firefly Island because it's a tiny little island and there's lots of fireflies and no wood ticks. So it's a beautiful place and it's on the Treaty 3 area of Rainy Lake. And the Treaty 3 of, I think that would be the First Nations and Métis. And my native name is Minogizibakwabak. And I also have a Menominee Kashi name about the wild rice. And Minogizibakwabak is the woman that goes in circles on the land and the water and the sky, doing good things. And I'm from the Loon clan, and my dad is a band member of the White Earth, but it is amazing to see the relatives and our ancestors stretching right into the Métis Treaty 3 territory, the Slayer, and also Red River Métis. So with that said, I have been thinking about your introduction, and I just think it's something else because I hope that people will want to listen to this station weekly, if not 5 days a week. The reason said is there's so much more to horses, equine, ponies, than I even had imagined. So it is a forever conversation, and I can't wait to get up in the morning every day. So it's almost like, for me, it's my Bible. They would have said I was like a witch long ago or a pagan, but it's not. It is spiritual for every unique individual that is connected with the earth. And that's why I'm saying this radio station is just a lifeline. And it was for me when I was interviewed in the States by Bobby Cleffin, All Things Equine, and the late Larry Aiken is a historian from the Leech Lake, Accord University or college. I think they call it colleges there. But he came on this radio interview, and there was a series of them. And on one of the series he was on, he said the little, he called them whatever we did. But at the time, I called them Ojibwe ponies or horses. But he said they were documented in the late 13, 1400s in the Birch Park Scrolls.
Oh, wow.
Now, I cannot make this up.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, it's on record, it's out there. Some people pretend it's theirs, and some people write books and all this stuff. But that is the interview. So if anybody wants to find it, they should be able to on All Things Equine. But I'm just saying we need equine, horse, native, wild ponies. We need all of this on a station in Canada. And I am so excited for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. Well, before the pandemic, I was doing Blue Sky Horse Radio, and I was doing Blue Sky Radio because once I started doing topics about horses and got into community radio, I sort of realized too, living in a city and just being a human, there is so much struggle. And after the pandemic, I decided to I was really focusing on community. And here's a chance to get back to with the horses, because horses have always been part of what I do, and they were the reason I got into radio, you know? So,
where were you born?
I'm born in Sweden.
That's what I was wondering. So what's the native pony of Sweden? I can't help it.
So they have these called Gotland Rus. So,
okay.
Yeah, Gotland is one of the islands. And like when they talk about the Vikings and like the Viking era and like but also the fjords would be like from around us. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, I could never have chosen this path. No clue. No way. So I credit the creator. And he or she, or maybe it's Sabe. Who knows? Whatever the creation is.
Yeah.
They've chosen to send these messages to me, which I a lot of times try to ignore, but you know what? I never ignored a thing. But that I know of right now, I'm really checking under every rock. But maybe I should just fast track this attach. But
sure. Yes, I know.
In Ottawa, I work for the NAC, and I got out there a little bit more than I expected with the youth. So many classrooms of Ottawa came to a show called The Spirit Horse, which means pony, returns, and I was asked to do the educational side of it. Well, I had no idea. I didn't know anything about it, but I just did it anyway because I just did whatever I thought I could, you know?
Yes.
And I'm telling you, the roof almost went right off that place. You ask anybody that was there, and no, that was not me who created that. Anyway.
I know. I've seen some of the posts and the footage. It's absolutely, yeah. And I read an article today, and that's exactly what says in the article too, that huge reception.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't crossed all levels in my education at all, but I'm telling you, like, it's turned into a profession of my own degree.
Yeah.
Those kids reached out, and some of them wanted me to do this fundraising for the ponies in Ottawa at the Trina Samard's Indigenous Madawi farm. And I did it, and there was never money discussed, and nothing was paid, and it wasn't even something that I have any idea why, because I a lot of times work for people that, you know, ask for invoices or honorarium. But it didn't even enter my mind till I explained it the other day. But this grade 4-5 classroom asked if they could do a project on the little ponies there. And I said, sure. So I set them up on a system of my way of thinking, kind of, I thought. And I just said, well, what do they need? Like, really, what do they need? They need to be in the wild or whatever. And the kids in the classroom, when they were done their projects, and we had talked a few times on Zoom and this and that, they presented it.
Yeah.
And they presented it with a picture they drew with art, like a doodle, like I said. That's the art. Woodland is like you're doodling the wild, right?
Right.
And they presented, the first one came up, and it was a Fisher.
Oh.
So we're looking at what do they need, but we didn't even go to what they already know, and they need it back again, right? So the children came up with the most magnificent artwork and doodles of these little wild animals and told me stories about them that I didn't even know, like the Fisher's chest markings could be different, or like it was just... I was shocked.
Yeah.
So I realized then, because I had a dream long ago, that I was going to have a book and a ranch called The Horse's Friends.
Oh.
So then the children told me, which I used to kind of hear this children's noises a lot, and it was happening at Ottawa. And they said the native pony needs its friend, its Fisher back. And in my mind, I'm going, oh, my goodness, they need their friends. Well, I knew that, but I never really thought of it so clearly and simply beautiful.
Wow.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. That's really incredible. It's so full circle, too.
It is. And now you mentioned where you from Sweden,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking native ponies.
Yeah.
Now, this is what I am all about. I may be a native Indian pony, but what pony are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
What pony are you in Sweden? Like, what ponies did they have? Did they start out with Percherons? Did they start out with tiny ponies? Were they off the, obviously, I don't think it's the Iberian, but the thing is that were they off of a certain smaller highland mountain?
That is so interesting.
That's named a pony, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a word for pony. So what I'm just saying is this whole thing has kind of brought to full circle to me. And I have maps in front of me here with little pin dots where they were in Pincher Creek and what happened to them in Pincher Creek. Where were they and why did they, they would hide away in the mountains, not on the islands. Like, what's going on here? So this whole thing is not me, because I had no clue. Mm-hmm. Even chase this down. It's the creator or creation's spirit put into me.
Yes.
And I'm so thankful, because that's why this show can be so huge. The main thing is I was told by Larry Aiken on that radio station, when they talked about it, that we need to be understand where they came from. We really, really need to know. And the Algonquin introduced them to the Ojibwe, but the little Mustangs that they say ran,
mm-hmm.
that's called mixed blood.
Oh, wow.
Blood with the Indian pony or native ponies from other countries. So this is why I'm so excited to be, I'm just finishing up. Of course, I have many places to go. But, I'm circling. It's exactly what I'm doing. I've been circling for decades and decades and decades. Even when I bought an Akkoltechi to reintroduce the Nez Perce horse, I realized the one in the barn that I chose besides the big new Nez Perce was a tiniest Akkoltechi, half the size of the rest. So I went and Googled it, and it's an ancestor, a relative of Absent. I don't know if you know who Absent is.
No, I don't.
But if you Google it.
Yeah, I will.
I could make a mistake here, but it's more Olympic gold medals or all medals in the history of any horse.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
So I saw it down his... whatever they call it. It's not important to me, but...
Mm-hmm.
And then I lined it up to a native racing pony of Turkmenistan. So I bought the tiny one.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then that's what I did all along, and I was basically crucified for it many times, but I held in some of the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
The most beautiful. I could have brought in a lot of money, but I picked the smallest.
Mm-hmm.
Like a dwarf land race pony.
Right.
Because they're going to be extinct.
Oh, goodness.
So, you know what I'm saying? They're going to be extinct. I'm worried. Mm-hmm. Maybe they aren't going to be, but I'm worried.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the story was getting buried.
Yeah.
So, I'll let you ask me some questions.
All right. Okay, so how did the grade 4 and 5 student teach you a huge lessons about the wild?
That is exactly what I spoke about with Ottawa and the children, the youth in grade 4 class. They brought out pictures they painted and doodled of all a bunch of wild animals.
Yeah.
And it expanded into they need to smell those pine trees again.
Yeah.
It is everything they need. They hit the water to make tea. Who's going to do that for them with fish and all this stuff and the tea they need? So it's all expanded into a research that I've gone into. And I am hopefully, like, I'm seeking somebody for a documentary on it. And
oh, nice.
It has to be in native time. But before I would share my findings, and then I see, like, oh, that's my artwork, or that's what I told them.
You are very, very busy, and I know, like, following your artwork, even just to create the art that you're doing, obviously takes such a long time, and you've been involved in so many different things since I've known you, you know, and seeing you on Native Report, for example, regarding you going to Minnesota to bringing the ponies back, you getting the Rare Breeds Canada recognition, you going to France and having gallery in France, and then now... I know that you have the equine-assisted learning and your involvement now with the education and bringing it back to the youth. Because also I remember you talking about the little ponies and how the children used to hide and how you heard those stories from the elders back in the day. So
And that's the crying I heard when I was with these wild ponies and no one believed me.
Oh, my God.
That's the crying I heard in the bush, and I told a few people about it, and they came out with me, and they said they could hear it, but at the time when they said they could hear it, I couldn't. So it was almost like, you know, Bigfoot's going to appear for whoever needs him to appear. And I never forgot it. And when the roof almost went off in Ottawa there with the children and then this project that I did because they were so sweet, the whole thing to me was like the roof went off for me realizing here that this is a journey of the most wonderful, and I just cannot fight it. Even when I went to France, I turned down that opportunity up until 2 weeks before that deadline, not the deadline, 2 weeks before the gallery show. Reconciliation. 2 weeks before, I messaged back to Melanie, wonderful Melanie, Miss Melanie Gerhard, and Raymond Hatfield. He was a big part of it. And I said I'd go. I had no idea until one day I cross-referenced an email that went to the group that was first invited, and I spoke with a lady that was on that list. I found her, and she was in Ottawa, and I messaged her, and she called me, and I said, are you going? And she said, yeah, I'm going. And I said, well, you know, I don't really know. She goes, Rhonda, there's white horses and flamingos. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. I think I put it on my credit card. I have no idea. But we stayed the rest by the host. And we were treated like royalty. And I ended up going to this ancient estate in France, all built in like 1812 or whatever. They have the boats that they do the running with the boats or whatever.
Oh, okay,
and
yeah.
And they have the museum, a private museum with the graveyards of the famous bulls. They brought us out there. Long story short, there was the white horses of France.
Yeah.
And so I have an interview with him in his museum talking about these white horses in France that used to be white little ponies.
Wow.
They evolved. Land race.
Can you explain about that? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Land race is something that's going to... It's a breed, or maybe it could be a plant or whatever, but that has evolved in that area and was land raised.
Right.
A land raised, like a race of humans.
Yeah.
So then I realized the little ponies were with the flamingos in the tall grasses. And where are they? So then I had to go see the original, like the big... place where they're at. Accidentally, it came with the gallery show, and I was offered even to ride one. I said, no, that's fine, I want to look at it and smell it. And then I do my research, I come up to that, and then I have them taped on my phone. It's on my phone. I hope nothing happens to my phone, but it's on my phone.
Yeah,
about they were like little ponies.
Wow.
So this is how we need to rethink things. What does Mustang mean? Everybody talks about the Bureau of Land Management. They talk about Mustangs. I've heard that. I heard Mustangs up in BC. But what is Mustang? It's what does it mean, like, to you? Because it meant just one thing to me before. It was like a horse, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's mixed. It doesn't even mean. It just means mixed breed.
Right. So what is it mixed with? Because how people have they say different things. And I mean, the knowledge of horse fossilized bones in North America, and North America being the birthing place for horses versus, oh, the Europeans brought them to North America. It's like,
yeah, so those bones you're digging up all over the place and all those tiny pony harnesses were Mustangs, they said.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there is like native ponies of black. Well, no, native ponies, for example, the native ponies of with the Algonquin.
Right.
They were spotted on the Grand Banks in 1813 by Peter something. He was explorer mapping out, you know. So he said they were shaggy little dogs living with Indians on the sand bank. They look like the worst Canadians.
Oh, wow.
You know what I...
Yeah.
So I have a map here, and I'm pinpointing all these things that are unbelievable.
I would love to see the map.
So that's what I'm doing, and I'm going to get this map to Ottawa so the kids can use it.
Nice.
I'm going to have to do one for them that is just basic, going around the world in circles, you know?
Right.
Like pretty lame. And, you know, the battle there with Custer's battle, like, it's right there in a report that there was 15 to 25,000. Maybe I have it right here. I was looking at it the other night.
Mm.
Native ponies.
Oh, that's a lot.
And they said it was something like 5,000 warriors, maybe women and children, and specifically the number of the native ponies. And they didn't say native, whatever. They didn't say Mustang. They didn't say, you know,
right,
Bell or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They said native, and through the archives, it says Indian ponies, not worth doing any work on the land. Yet they did the work anyway.
Yeah.
For years and years and decades. So, yeah. So anyway, here I go again.
Yeah. Well, you go, because that's why I like talking with you, because, you know, since I got to know you, you have been preserving, and for much longer. You know, I watched the Native report when you're bringing ponies back, and mm-hmm. you're talking about the history, and the people get involved right away. People are so drawn to the horses. Horses are medicine for people, and they're so needed. And I know one of your vision is to reintroduce the Native ponies onto Crown land, and that also with the First Nations people and areas that, you know, kind, you know, goes hand in hand, and that would be a way of reconciliation, really, and just a good future for Canada.
Yeah, it really is important, and it really is something that I'm hoping that we can all circle together, because this is, we're talking Native ponies from all over the world in a preserve as well. Because I am just excited to share my findings on that.
Mm-hmm.
I live with a lot of these ponies, and I don't know, but at sometimes I had around a dozen sometimes stallions. And this is a fenced-in place, so that's not an easy thing.
Right.
So when I had to make my choice to geld, I gelded the bigger ones. Because I know the truth. I saw it. I saw the wild, because I saw it. There's one thing, there's people in this world that may have experienced it. Some people lived it. Somebody might not have quite caught on to it.
Yeah.
But a little lesson I got just recently on that was I went to Sable Island.
Oh, yes.
I thought, I'm coming in as a wild Native pony photographer. I'm ready to go. I have no idea anything about photography. And I forgot my camera chip. I forgot my charger for my battery at home, because I didn't want to put it as priority. I put all my priority to Ottawa, because I stopped there to teach about roping from a lady I learned from, a breakaway roper.
Okay.
Indian woman, breakaway roping, that's what they called it. So she was the champion in Canada. So I shared that in Ottawa of how to rescue with a rope.
Wow, Rhonda.
So good. I want every woman out there, every man, everybody from all over the world to swing that rope. We're all Native. We swing ropes for different reasons, but there's a way to swing it to rescue. And that's what I needed that rope for. And I learned how from her. And the thing is that that's why I went. So I never thought about Sable until after, besides putting it on my credit card,
mm-hmm.
Till after Ottawa. I never even planned hardly nothing. So I didn't have my stuff on my camera. I was going to go buy a brand new one and put it on the credit card, and I didn't. And I ended up getting saved by a nice man who had a charger. Anyway, I get to the island because I heard I had a really good lens, they told me, at the camera shop. But when I got there, I did exactly what I did when I lived with the little wild ponies, and I looked at herds that were even contained, but most of the time they were getting out. But and they were living and surviving, but the only problem they had was humans.
Yeah.
And so when I got to Sacred Island, I never once touched the Zoom.
Okay.
Okay, it's like shooting a moose and don't care about the antlers, you just need the food, right? That's not what you do nowadays. Anyway, I got pictures of stories of how those herds work together, coming in and out of those dunes, meeting up with each other. And then it sunk in. This is the wild that we all need to experience, because it was at times for me gut-wrenching. I saw something on its way to the Jabai, up into the spirit world. I saw something that many things that were already there. It's a brood, but a real awakening. How much rude awakening do we get in this world we live in? Like murders, all kinds of rude awakenings, bombs, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing the true wild and knowing it and smelling it, I could smell those seals. I could smell that grass. I could smell that ocean. I could smell the fish. And then I realized I was smelling the seahorse and all things in Africa. Every place in the world is in that ocean. And when you have that in your mind, what am I going to zoom up on?
Right. Wow.
They're beautiful,
mm-hmm.
but there's more to them. They're they're a worldly pony.
Yeah.
And they are ponies. I made the mistake of calling them horses at one time, too, but they are ponies.
Mm-hmm.
When I was going there flying, I was told they were horses, they weren't ponies.
Oh.
But I went there prepared to see horses there. I thought, I'm okay with that. I just want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to feel it. I want to smell it. And I want to lay down in the grass like I did with my wild herds. And that's what I did. And I spent less time taking pictures and more time in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw not one horse on that island.
Mm-hmm.
The only horse on that island was a picture I saw of the original domesticated horses that they brought over, that never, like, mostly everything perished, but the horses, they said.
Yeah.
Those ponies did not look like those horses. That horse in that picture, a lot of them horses that were pulling the parts. So I'm just saying I have a research on the boat here that I'm basically almost done. But
that sounds very exciting.
The first level.
Yeah. But that's very exciting. That's a lot of work went into it. And it's so important also, just like you say, we need the wild, and there's so much artificial that goes on, and people are so lost and so confused, and literally just even going outside and taking your shoes off, they call that grounding. Like, people who live in the city, you know, like, it's very busy living. So what you're talking about is just incredible.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm at sat with Jack Brainerd right next to him, the horse whisperer, for 2 days, I think it was, watching him. Like, I like to see both sides. And from what he taught me when I left, there is nothing wrong with that. Even though the horse's head's high, you know, the gaping mouth, or whatever, but she's doing all right. You're doing all right, ma'am. Just keep it up. You're doing all right.
I hear you. There's so many.
Okay.
Yeah.
So grounding and stuff like that and all that stuff, I never would have, I put that into the parallel because, but then he'd look at me and he'd say, and this is what I think we're talking about. He looked at me where she couldn't hear, and he said, but, oh, she could have so much more.
Oh, wow.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
It's my was always kind of told I had my grandma's curse, but I think she had a very simple way of thinking. She wasn't a good mother. She wasn't a good grandma to me either. I mourn that. But she had a simple way of thinking, like in her poem. I have a poem. She has a poem. She did art. She put birch bark on her art. She talked about a bird on a wing flying by. The meat is on the in the water and the bird on a wing. And just her poem. I want to put it out there someday. Mm-hmm. And then I have my poem of ancient fingers through their manes, winding down trails. You know, I have my poem. But it's so much similar, you know, and it's all connected, right?
Wow, though. Yeah. A simple life can be such a good life, because what do we really need in this world? Like, people have so much and they're still not happy. And also it's taking too much from the earth, whereas, you know, really having somewhere safe to live or sleep and, you know, the food and community, those things.
Exactly. I love that, eh?
Yeah.
And equine-assisted learning. Yeah, I did that. And I did all of a sudden, like, not all of a sudden, when I came home right away, I knew I had to change a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so now it's the experiences of the native pony that can bring us further, working in corporations, working towards honesty, working towards integrity, working towards reasons why. And it's the wild. And the same thing, I have a shirt out there now. We just sold the last of the first edition. It's called Friends of the Native Pony. And it's got a moose, a beaver that's brown. There's two other different colors of beavers. And I'll explain that in another story.
Nice.
I built a cabin with three tools and everything. I learned about that. But this shirt has got a beaver, a moose, and a native pony. And lots of life, wildlife in there with water and cattails. And it says no nuclear waste in the north. Really? No nuclear waste anywhere.
Yeah.
This is a donation fully. I just sent it off to people that I can trust. And they right now, today, or some big hotel has the t-shirt, Lexington, maybe. I don't know. It's on my phone, but they have it for a big event in the hotel for an auction item.
And oh, nice.
So see what I mean? It's in really good hands.
Yeah.
And it's long sleeve, short sleeve, V-neck, whatever. And then the next edition is in the works, and it's the same sort of thing. But, you know, it could be the other colored beaver.
Mm.
And it isn't the albino.
Aw.
So, like, it's in there, in the Native Pony Nubis.
Yes, I love that.
Classroom taught me it.
Wow. That is so amazing, Rhonda. I love this conversation. There's so much information. You know, I have a YouTube channel, and I went to it to see our other interviews, and then I'm looking at your artwork, and then my jaw is, like, dropping, and I'm like Googling you and looking you up and reading about, you know, the National Art Center and, you know, all of the things that you're bringing to the youth and the reception of it. And it's really amazing. You're doing this. You're doing this. Like, you're getting word out about
it. I'm so fortunate. And guess what? I have, it's called, I did a fireside chat, but anyway, I've been reaching out to remote communities, and there's like 400 and if not 500 or some. So I've reached out to many of those communities now. Some, I don't speak their language, way far. And I'm so more excited every time, because I'm sharing everything from my heart. And I do say, I don't know for sure exactly what this is, but this is my native pony knowledge. And if you want to know the sightings of what I've told you today, to cite this, like, I didn't get it to a professor first. You want to cite. I can cite, it's cited.
Mm-hmm.
Every spot on this map is cited. for everyone. It's like medicine. We all can look at it, enjoy it, and do our own observation.
Yeah.
Because this is in the worlds when people were called witches and pagans.
Right.
Because they didn't follow all the rules of the religion. So this is a map that's got a lot of stuff in it. But really, it's like, to me, simply, it just makes sense. But I did cite everything.
Yeah, no, I hear you, because there's always some people that are going to say, oh, how can you prove that? And the longer that we hear about all this, it's become a fairly well-known fact that North America, like this land, does have ancient bones in the ground of horses. It's kind of a proven scientific thing, and only some people are going to say, oh, show us the evidence. It's kind of like, yeah, the evidence has been shown already, and you're adding more information to that map. So I can't wait to see that map, and I can't wait to hear more about the reception of that and, you know, you bringing it to Ottawa.
Thing is that about this information is that I'm sharing it with the kids, and I'm sharing with everybody I get a chance to share it. I got to share the first part of the map I made in Ottawa. It was making sense. Now people want this map, and so that's what I'm doing. But I'm not doing it for a book or nothing. But when I Google, that's what I'm thinking. I'm all over the internet. It says that these ponies were here.
Yeah,
all these things. When decades ago, not one person in the whole entire world believed Bobby Kaplan, and there's Elwood Cliff. But I'm just saying,
yeah,
it's everywhere. I don't know how I feel about that. I feel wonderful. But the thing is it's shocking for me to have a flip like that.
I know.
So that's why I kind of wanted to keep on going.
Yes, of course, of course.
I went through a lot of hardships. But you know what? You don't learn sometimes to the magnitude if you don't, because you could never imagine if somebody said, oh, you just escaped a hardship. Well, can you imagine living every detail of that hardship?
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? Every detail.
You created meaning. Look at your art. It's so extraordinary. You literally, your art is so beautiful and has so much meaning. You created meaning out of your hardship, and you rose above and persevered. And went to France and are bringing the native ponies with you everywhere and teaching people and kids. That's incredible.
Yeah, and actually the owner of the gallery, her father, which is maybe he was the gallery owner at the beginning, her father-in-law, whatever. Mm-hmm. He bought, Gerhard himself, he bought the painting of the original that I painted in decades ago. And it was done with, like, dollar store paint.
Yeah.
Started with Hyde's spaghetti for the fine details. I'm just saying, and now I can't wait to get back on that more.
Mm-hmm.
But for a while there, I had to run and run in the sun to deserve the right. I cannot paint something I know isn't exactly my heart.
Yeah.
I do sometimes for the people, but... so I'm so excited to get on the roll of this, and the nuclear waste is one of the artworks that I'm putting out there and one I'm working on. So, I mean, I'm excited, really excited.
Mm-hmm. I saw your painting, you posted it on on your Facebook, and it's so time applicable, because here we are in Ontario, and they're talking about hiding the nuclear waste somewhere, and they're calling it safe, but it's like Northern Ontario right now is on fire. Places, like, how can it be safe? It's not safe to begin with. So I really liked your painting, protecting the forest, and really showing, like, somebody's standing up for this, and a lot of people are, and thank you for doing that too.
That's what happens when you take vast herds of buffalo and Indian ponies and destroy them. The buffalo, everyone knew they were taking their hides, but these little worthless ponies, they were crunching up for dog meat.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's what I'm saying.
The wild.
humans can be wild in a different direction.
Yeah.
So this is what happens, and now we have global warming. Okay, people out there, please, go to international Zooms. That's where you're going to get the truth, because these are the countries that have made the decisions to do what they're doing and why they're making them. Check out, is nuclear waste safe? Is it fire-resistant containers? Or are they fireproof? For how long and what degree? You're going to find these answers not on Canadian Nuclear Commission or industry that's different. You got to take the time and realize we're burning up here.
Yeah.
What's the sense in having a horse show? What's the sense in getting a new sauna? What's the sense in doing anything if we're going to burn right up?
I know, right? I know.
People are fishing all the time. I guarantee you, if I held my T-shirt up and said I'd sell it to them for $10, they might take it. I don't know. But they can take fish, no problem.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to give back. And this is long overdue. It's not up to us to do it, but it seems it's up to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're doing a
lot,
and you're getting to know the next generation as well, and for the young people to be coming up this way and learning about something real and something that is connected to the land.
I can tell you, there ain't a movie that is as good as this, because I had kids riding a seahorse, a zebra, and their dad sat in the grass. Because they didn't want to leave. They were throwing rope and keep on promising, sorry, I'm done soon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is the youth.
Yeah.
And that's not even the youth. This is fathers showing up for kids. But we're roping to rescue.
Yeah. That's really good, Rhonda.
So, equine assisted learning now has changed into, like, a more experience and, they have that in Ottawa at Madawi. And, I'm so excited to share. You can hear the kingfishers before they even get here now for me. Because those children in that classroom made me think differently. And I think about when I'm seeing a beaver, like last night, we went island hopping. And it was just to take pictures, that's all. And, there's lots of encounters, and I see it differently. Like, yes, the native pony used to hear these sounds. Dolly used to hear the sounds. She lived right around where the houseboat was. Tony, the little native Rainy Lake pony.
Mm-hmm.
All ponies come from somewhere. You guarantee that. And it's really exciting to find out where they have come from.
Yeah. Thank you, Rhonda. I know there's so many stories. And in your paintings, you paint these stories, too, about, you know, the different little ponies and the work they did and their connection to their humans and the importance, you know. Where can people see your artwork on the internet?
Well, that's the problem. I didn't realize that I was as dyslexic as I am, so it can be a little disastrous at times, but... I grew up saying proper grasses. I was okay until they got into the serious grade 9 math. You can't switch things around in math. So anyway, with that, I hired, and it's taken me forever to get the money, hired to do a website. People have the most beautiful websites. I wanted one. So I did, and I finally paid for it. But the fella quit before he could teach me how to run it. So I went in there and deleted it accidentally.
Yeah. Well,
I can't get it back.
You're just building your renown. I mean, you're the type of person people have to wait for, and you're worth waiting for. So in the meantime, I do have some of your just to showcase via my YouTube channel. You can watch and you can wait for Rhonda Snow. Yeah, to get her website up. It's definitely worth waiting for. And there's lots of information about Rhonda Snow as well on the internet and the different projects and all of your history and getting the little ponies, the native ponies, you know.
Yeah, and when I lost the native ponies, guess who was on the auction block being the auctioneer? And I was crying, but they couldn't do it because they didn't know nothing about them.
Yeah.
I was auctioning my own ponies off by Fort Gordon. So I'm just saying the story does go on, but it's all things that I have learned, things that are important. So, you know, I have a Facebook page. So it can, like this, I just said to somebody today that it's the first time I'm really making this public. I don't know if my followers can follow me if I'm public, but anyway, or backwards, I mean, but I'm making it public. So if somebody maybe follows me, I don't know, but I'm going to try to share as much as I can. And it's so much, but I got to find a simpler way. So I'm going to put in the native pony of Sable Island. So hopefully people won't get upset about that, but... And my stories of how I noticed different herds and the sizes of the different herds. And what was that? Why did that little colt take off? And what happened? So it's not only knowing all this stuff I've talked to you about, it's knowing the wild. You got to know how a flower opens, starts, the seeds and everything, if you're really going to know that flower. So the wild has got so much to know. So through Sable Island or through other things, I can't be that wild horse photographer. I have to be the voice of that native pony and its life, not just what it looks like.
That makes sense, Rhonda. I can see you that way because you're not there to interfere. You're there to help shine a light on it, really, and not to take from it. A lot of people, they take and make a profit. And you could make a profit, and you're refusing to. You just want to do what's right and help relay.
Yeah, whatever happens, happens. Yeah. There's no fun here. I am solely with this documentary. I have that person that knows what they're doing.
That's so exciting. I can't wait to watch that. Wow.
I don't plan, but I just want to connect with everybody because we could all gather together with all our knowledge and do great things. Nothing's more important what I do than somebody else does.
Right.
Like, for example, wild horse photography. Oh, my goodness, it's wonderful. But if everybody could connect and make a difference in this world, I don't think it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to just shut the reactors down. They're heating up the earth, or study more and give us transparency.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, Rhonda, this has been a great 50 minutes so far, getting to know you a little bit better with the updates and a little bit of historical stuff. You mentioned Elder Larry Atkin and the birch bark scrolls. Why are they so important?
Well, to me, it's, believe me, I'm not highly educated. I'm backwards thinking. But to me, the birch bark scrolls, for me to explain it how I feel in my heart was, I was raised Catholic, and I know that you have to go into certain levels of that church, maybe, or, you know, maybe it starts with, I'm just thinking this off the cuff right now, baptism and communion and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But for Larry, I think he was up on the levels of that medicine society. They would call it witchcraft. Demonic, pagan. I have no idea all these levels. They're all over the world with the native people.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry Atkin was up there, and he has passed away now. But, and also my relatives from White Earth, one of the relatives knew him. But he talked about the little, the Ojibwe ponies or horses, I can't remember what he called them, because it was already put on a word for him, so I don't know if he used it. But he said that they were documented in the early, the late 1300s, 1400s. Now, I don't know if he's talking about like, because I never really could understand it in school, but that would be, in my mind, is that the real 1300s? Or is it like, you know, the 1200s? I have no clue.
Right.
Let's just say it's the 14 even. He had knowledge. He was a doctorate of the wild, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was in the college historian. But so what he said was amazing. He spoke about the little ponies, how they had the Algonquin, had them.
Yeah.
Is that something else?
It is.
When you think about where are the Algonquin located?
Right.
Not migrated, located.
Yeah.
Because long ago, my medicine man, who told me not long ago, he said there was no such thing as tribes long ago. Here nor there, the Algonquin looked like it was quite a bit of different land race people with similar cultures and languages.
Mm-hmm.
So here, Larry Aiken had that knowledge.
Wow, I bet you your map you're working on has some of these places pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to seeing the map and just staying in touch with you.
Yep.
Wow.
There's so much to it. There's like 1800s. There is the third, say 1400s. In a sneak peek, there's the Basque whalers, 1500s. But it's all connected because they were from the Great Pyrenees. And later on, the Basque mixed in with Spanish people. And I'd have to double check it, but I'll just go on in the limb, chop the head off time. But I think the Basque were involved in the times of Christopher Columbus. But beforehand, they were already landed in Canada and killed a lot of whales, like as many as United States or North America. But here we go again. Often that, but Larry Aiken, he sparked that question in me when he said Algonquin. And then he said the Algonquin introduced them. So Algonquin peoples introduced them to the Ojibwe. Now there's Ojibwe on the border there, Ojibwe on the north, Ojibwe a little bit, and sometimes it's Chippewa in the States. So can you see where I'm going now on that journey in that circle? So another thing with the fireside chats with the youth, that's what I say. You may be a different thinker, but you're you.
Yeah.
You know, so when Larry talked about it on that interview, I was able to go into that small little circle there for quite a long time. And then I can paint it when I know. That's why your painting is more than just a painting, right? It's full of even, actually, some have tears in them. Some have, you know, porcupine quills. So, birch bark, like my grandma.
Yeah, anyway. You're a real artist. You're a real, actual artist. You literally express all of these things. Not only do you get to experience it, but then you create something that other people can then try to understand this world that you're talking about. And, you know, so thank you, Rhonda. I really appreciate your time today.
You're very welcome. Good luck with horse-centered radio station, but I just love it.
Thank you.
For your time.
Oh. Thank you.
tonight.